Hi, Matt here. We're excited to celebrate a milestone. Think Fast, Talk Smart is approaching our 300th episode. To mark the occasion, I'll be hosting two free Ask Matt Anything events on June 3rd at 8 a.m. or 8 p.m. Pacific. We'll run these on LinkedIn and YouTube, open to everyone around the globe. Before taking your questions, I'll share one of my favorite new communication structures for advancing ideas and arguments. Anyone joining can submit questions online during the event, and a few of our learning community members will have the opportunity to ask me their questions live on video. Don't miss this opportunity to be part of this live AMA on June 3rd. Be sure to sign up on LinkedIn, YouTube, or fastersmarter.io/live. Now a word from one of our sponsors. Their support covers the cost of production, allowing us to bring you quality content free of charge. Language isn't just about words. It's about connection, opportunity, and credibility. That's one reason I like Babbel. It focuses on real-world communication, not just vocabulary drills, but practical conversations you can actually use, whether that's collaborating internationally, traveling for work, or building relationships across cultures. The lessons are short, about 10 minutes, so they fit into busy schedules, and they're designed by more than 200 language experts with tools for listening, speaking, reading, and writing. It adapts to how you learn and helps you track real progress over time. For many of our listeners, whether you're strengthening English skills, adding another language for professional growth, or staying connected globally, it's a practical way to keep moving forward. Babbel has over 25 million subscriptions sold worldwide, offers 14 languages, and every course comes with a 14-day money-back guarantee. If you've ever thought about learning another language, this is a perfect opportunity to start. Right now, Babbel is offering up to 60% off your subscription at babbel.com/TFTS. That's Babbel, Babbel.com/TFTS for up to 60% off. Rules and restrictions apply. Developing good habits is helpful in communication and our everyday lives. When it comes to building habits, emotion and how you feel matters a lot. My name is Matt Abrahams, and I teach strategic communication at Stanford Graduate School of Business. Welcome to this Rethinks episode of Think Fast, Talk Smart, the podcast. We're opening up the vault and resharing a really insightful conversation I had with Stanford professor B.J. Fogg. Listen in to learn how to create successful habits, no matter how big or small. Today, I am really looking forward to speaking with B.J. Fogg. B.J. is a research associate and adjunct professor at Stanford University. He is the founder and director of the Stanford Behavior Design Lab. B.J. also coaches companies and executives around the world. Finally, he is the author of two great books, Persuasive Technology and Tiny Habits. Welcome, B.J.
Thank you for inviting me. I've been looking forward to talking to you.
Me too. So let's go ahead and get started. As many of our listeners know, I have long been fascinated by persuasion and behavioral change. One of the things that first drew me to your work, BJ, was that you refer to something called the information action fallacy. And I believe it's this fallacy that helped you create your model of behavior change. Can you share with us what this fallacy is? And then share the three components of your behavior change model.
For decades, maybe longer, people have assumed that if you just give people information, it will change their behavior. And this doesn't work very well. And so I decided to give this problem a name, this fallacy a name. And that's what it's called, information action fallacy. And it goes like this. If we give people information, that will then change their attitude. And then with attitude change, they will then change their behavior. Now, those links between information and attitude change, that's not a very reliable link. And even if you can change somebody's attitude, that doesn't necessarily change their behavior. The second part of your question had to do with the behavior model. So this came together for me in about 2007, and it is a model that describes all behavior types in all cultures and so on. It's a universal model. It goes like this. A behavior happens when three things come together at the same moment. One, there's motivation to do that behavior. Two, there's ability to behavior. And three, there's a prompt, something that says, do this behavior now. And when all those things come together, the behavior happens. And if any one of those things is missing, like there's no motivation or there's no ability or no prompt, then the behavior does not happen.
As the father of two teenage boys, I have certainly seen the information action fallacy happen in my own life. Give them lots of information, hoping they'll change attitudes, and we don't see any behavior change. In terms of the model, the question I have is around, what is a prompt? How do you define that prompt? I get ability, I get motivation. What does a prompt refer to?
And that's an excellent question, Matt, because I mean, the idea of ability and motivation being important has been around for a long time. You can talk about skill and will and so on, which is effectively that. The breakthrough really was understanding there has to be a prompt. A prompt is anything that says, do this now. Your phone ringing is a prompt. Somebody asking you a question is a prompt to reply. You looking at an action item on your to-do list is a prompt. There are a whole bunch of ways that we couldn't even be prompted internally, like sensing hunger is a prompt. And what's important about that is we've got to make sure for the behaviors we want that the prompts happen. And if we're trying to stop or reduce behaviors, to minimize or get rid of the prompts. So you can design for behavior change simply, in some ways, by focusing on prompt design.
I see. So it's finding the prompts that can trigger the behavior you want or removing some of those prompts to get rid of the behaviors you don't want to invoke.
Yeah, so that's one of the three things, levers, one of the three things you have to play around with to get a behavior to happen or not to happen. And even though it's, you can write it in three letters, B equals MAP, it is a profound model that can be used in so many ways.
Can you give us an example of a way in your coaching or teaching that can relate to the listeners and things that they, a behavior they might want to change and how they can use those three levers to accomplish that?
Yeah. Let's say that you want to read more. I mean, we read all the time, like email, social media, but you want to read books. So number one, define what the behavior is. Okay. I want to read this particular book. Okay. Reading more is abstract. It's not a behavior. It's like an outcome. So pick a book you actually want to read. So that's the motivation part. Don't pick a book you don't want to read. So that's motivation. Next, ability. How do you make it easier to read that book? Well, you could get a paper version of the book and you could set it right by a chair that you sit in all the time. And then the third thing, prompt. What is going to prompt to remind me? In this case, the Kindle sitting there, that is its prompt right there. I don't have to put on a to-do list. I don't have to put on the calendar. I don't put up a post-it note. In this case, the object that I need to read, the Kindle, or maybe the paperback version of a book, is the thing that will prompt me. So when you sit down, you see the book, it's like, oh, I can read now. And just open up the book and continue reading.
Part of what you said that was really enlightening for me was that notion of being very specific about the behavior you want to change. So it's not just reading in general. And I set often lofty goals for myself. I want to do more exercise or lose weight. But it sounds like what I should be doing is being much more specific. And that's, I think, going to be really helpful. Unlike my work on behavioral change, which is focused on how to change other people's attitudes and behaviors, you focus on how we can change our own behavior. The unit of change you highlight is habits. Can you define what a habit is and share some of the maxims that you've come up with regarding habits?
Yeah. So the way I define habit is it's a behavior you do quite automatically without deciding, without deliberating, without thinking very much. And we have many, many habits. And the good news here is habits are easier to form than most people think if you do it in the right way. And that's what my tiny habits method is all about. It just breaks it down. It's very straightforward and people can form habits quickly and easily. Looking at creating habits or any type of lasting change, I've distilled the keys to habit formation or engagement or lasting change down into two statements. Number one, is help yourself do what you already want to do. So notice in that, so you pick habits you already want to do, don't pick habits you don't want to do, and help yourself do it. And you help yourself do it by making that habit easier. And there's different ways to make it easier. So we're back to ability, we're back to simplicity. And you make it, help yourself do that by making sure there's a prompt. So within that one statement that I call fog maxim number one, help yourself do what you already want to do, it brings together motivation, ability, and prompt in that statement. So that's number one. Fog maxim number two is help yourself feel successful. And even though that's four words, that can be challenging to do, but it is very much worth knowing how to help and learning and developing the skill, frankly, it's a skill of helping yourself feel successful, because it's that feeling, it's that emotion of success that wires in habits. That's what causes a behavior that you're deliberating or deciding or thinking about turn into a behavior you do without thinking or deciding, a behavior you do quite automatically. It's emotions that create habits. And that's why the feeling of success is so important, because when you do a new behavior and you feel successful, then you shift it on this continuum of automaticity and it becomes more automatic.
I think most of us think of habits as a mental effort. So the role of emotion to me is really, really intriguing in setting us up for success so we can have that feeling of success as a reinforcing mechanism, I think is really, really cool.
You said the exact right word. By causing yourself to feel successful, you are self-reinforcing. And you can do this deliberately. You don't have to leave that reinforcement to chance or to other people. You can self-reinforce. And that's part of the Tiny Habits Method. And we call that approach celebration. But what you're doing is causing yourself to feel successful at the right moment in order to self-reinforce and cause that behavior to become more likely and more automatic.
That's great. And I've got lots of ways to feel really good about some of the habits I'm trying to take on. I'm going to reward myself with my favorite chocolate, I think. I'd love for you to give me specific advice on a habit I'm trying to develop better. As many of our listeners know, I'm a big believer in paraphrasing as a way to validate others' comments and to validate the accuracy of my understanding. What advice can you give me to make paraphrasing a stronger, better habit for me?
So in other words, what you want to hear from me is how to make paraphrasing a stronger habit.
Touché. Yes, you already have this habit, clearly.
No, I don't. Okay. You know, first of all, get clear. I mean, you're pretty clear. Of course, you're super clear on this, Matt, but people listening, it's like, okay, what does paraphrasing mean? And then when somebody says something to you, have that be the prompt or the reminder to paraphrase it back to them. And then when you do that, and this is where the reinforcement comes in, pay attention to how they respond. And I think many times you will see, if you're talking face to face, you will see them light up, or you will be able to say, yes, exactly. Embrace that as a positive result. In other words, pay attention to their response. That will reinforce the paraphrasing behavior. So let me paraphrase that on myself again. Number one, be clear on what it means to paraphrase. Number two, know when you're going to do it. What is the prompt or cue? It's after somebody tells you something. And then after you paraphrase, stay tuned for that reaction from the other person and really allow yourself to feel that positive reaction. That will help create that habit.
That's really helpful. And the last piece I find most helpful is I am often so focused on just making sure I paraphrase that I don't take the time to actually celebrate the result of that paraphrasing. Like, wow, that person really responded positively, or they gave me more information as a response to my paraphrasing. So that celebration piece, which clearly I can see would be reinforcing and incent me and motivate me to paraphrase even more, would be really helpful. So have that clarity of what I mean by paraphrasing. And to me, it's really distilling down what the person is saying. Use their response as my trigger to actually initiate the paraphrase. And then the big one for me is celebrate. Did I paraphrase that okay, BJ? How'd I do?
I thought that was great.
I'd like to change the subject a little bit to better understand from you what role specificity and repetition play in building a new habit. You often hear just keep doing it over and over again, and it becomes a habit. And I'm not quite sure you believe that.
Yeah, exactly. Well, specificity, be very clear. Going back to the reading example, don't just think, I want to read more. Be very clear. I want to read this book. And you might even define how much of the book. I think that's less important than knowing what book. And you might even define the location. I want to read this book while sitting in this chair. It seems that there's a big difference to our brains between read more and after I sit in the chair, I will read this book. And our brain can connect with the second and prompt you to do it, and you're more likely to do it. The next topic around repetition, it's long been said that repetition is the key to creating habits, and that's just not true. It's emotions. What role does repetition play? Well, if you do a behavior and you feel strong positive emotion as you do it, that habit will wire in very quickly. There's a type of habit that I call one and done. You do it one time and the habit is wired in because the emotion was so strong. For example, you buy a new car and you drive the car to work. That's not going to take very long for driving the new car to become a habit because you're going to feel so great. Or you find a new way to drive to Stanford that's prettier and faster. The sense of success of it's more beautiful and faster is going to wire it in. If the feeling of success is not that strong, then it takes more. It's like you're inching toward the automaticity. And so in that case, doing the habit, let's say daily, allowing yourself to feel successful, then that will create a solid habit. It won't be one and done. So you need to, if you can't feel a strong positive emotion, you need to repeat the habit. But it's not the repetition that's creating the habit. It's the emotion that you feel. So let's be really clear about that. Yes, you may need to repeat the habit and cause yourself to feel successful multiple times for it to really wire in. But it's not a function of repetition. It's a function of emotion.
So let me give you an example. I know exercise is good for me, but I don't like exercising or it hurts and I'm tired and fatigued afterwards. Forcing myself to continue to exercise actually is working against building it as a habit is what I heard you say, because I'm not having a positive experience. It would be better for me to find a more positive way to get that physical activity. Is that correct?
Yes, exactly. So there's at least 100 ways to exercise. Find the way that you like, find the way that causes you to feel successful. And just because somebody runs a lot doesn't mean running is the right exercise for you. I know it's not the right one for me. That's for sure. It would be very hard for me to create running as a habit, even though I'm really great at habits. And part of being great at creating habits is knowing which habits to pick. So don't pick the ones that you don't like or don't want or are painful for you.
I got it. I actually do enjoy running. And in fact, the reward and celebration I have is I get the opportunity to listen to podcasts. So for me, that's positive. But there are many other types of exercise I do not like. And I like what you just shared that can help me look for others that would be more positive.
We'll be right back to finish our conversation. But first, a quick word from one of our sponsors. Their support allows us to bring you this show free of charge. When things get busy, and they always do, the real challenge is focus, knowing where to spend your time so you actually make meaningful progress. But that's hard when you're trying to do everything yourself. That's where Upwork can help. Upwork is a one-stop platform to find, hire, and pay expert freelancers across areas like marketing, development, data and analytics, and more. It gives you fast access to specialized talent so you can move quickly, fill key gaps, and keep your work moving forward without getting stuck. You can browse profiles, review past work, and get help scoping your project so you can hire with confidence and get started faster. And if speed really matters, you can connect with top-tier talent and get matched in under 6 hours. It's a simple way to maintain momentum and focus on what matters most. Visit Upwork.com right now and post your job for free. That's Upwork.com to connect with top talent ready to help your business grow. That's UPWORK.com. If you think about it, a lot of our communication challenges at work aren't about what we say. They're about what never gets clearly shared in the first place, especially as teams grow and change. Processes live in people's heads, explanations vary, and over time, that leads to confusion and inconsistency. This is exactly the problem today's sponsor, Scribe, was built to solve. Trusted by over 80,000 enterprises, including nearly half of the Fortune 500, Scribe is a workflow AI platform that captures what you're doing in real time and automatically turns it into clear, step-by-step guides. No recording, no manual write-ups. So instead of adding one more task to your to-do list, you can just do your work knowing it's being documented for others. As our team has grown, we've spent a lot of time walking people through onboarding, tool transitions, and cross-team workflows. And the reality is, we're often just too busy to stop and properly document all of it. With Scribe, you just turn on the extension, go through the process, and it builds the guide as you go. Something that might take hours or get pushed aside entirely now takes seconds. It also automatically redacts sensitive information so you can share confidently across teams, contractors, and new hires. And anyone following along gets real-time on-screen guidance. So the message isn't just sent, it's actually understood and applied. And what I really appreciate is that Scribe doesn't just document your processes, it helps you improve them by showing you where things could be more consistent, more efficient, and easier to hand off. To book a personalized enterprise demo, visit scribe.how/thinkfast. That's scribe.how/thinkfast. And now, back to our conversation.
So before we end, I like to ask the same three questions of all of my guests. Are you willing to answer them for me?
Sure. Let's go.
Okay. If you were to capture the best communication advice you have ever received as a 5 to 7 word presentation slide title, what would those 5 to 7 words be?
Remember what it's like not to know.
Oh, so cool. Why is that the advice you would share?
I was mentored by a brilliant man named Jonas Harris. And this is back in the day when I was a technical writer, and he was teaching me to be a technical editor and to teach technical writing. And one of his big things was, remember what it's like not to know. And essentially, that's a way to say have empathy, you know, and consider the audience and remember where they're coming from. And that has guided my work ever since. You know, I moved away from technical writing and technical communication and other things, but remember what it's like not to know. Yeah.
That is such powerful advice because, quite frankly, it's the antidote to the curse of knowledge. We all know a lot about what we're communicating and we miss helping people understand it because we come from the wrong place. So that beginner's mind, I really appreciate. I'll be curious to hear your answer to question 2. Who is a communicator that you admire and why?
There is a songwriter named Shauna Edwards. And I've been working with her on songs about habits for kids. So I've been working with her for about a year and a half. And she is amazing at taking concepts. Like, I'll write some draft lyrics and they're just too complicated and not good for kids. And she'll just crunch them down into a much simpler version that still has the power. And then she can put music to them. It is just amazing to see how she communicates with words and music for the audience we're trying to reach, which is kids from 3 to 11.
I think it's great that you're trying to help kids in that age group. And I think it's fascinating to know that you're a lyricist. I did not know that that was one of the many things that you have.
I see myself more as the court jester. Working with someone as talented as Shauna Edwards, what a privilege. And I've just learned so much, but mostly just admire what she can do that I probably never will be able to do.
It is a true pleasure to be in the presence of people who have mastered their craft, for sure. Final question, question 3. What are the first 3 ingredients that go into a successful communication recipe?
I wrote down these words before we started, but it's a great kind of wrap up of what we talked about. Empathy, 1. Simplicity and practicality.
Certainly. And those ingredients can absolutely help you be very clear, concise, and in many ways compelling. And I appreciate that. And I appreciate that your answer to this question was a model of all 3 of those. Well, thank you, BJ. I love your actionable, specific advice and guidance. I encourage everybody to check out the work you do, especially the Tiny Habits book. You have a free 5-day course. I am a graduate of that course. I have found it very helpful. Thank you for your time and thank you for your insight.
Thank you, Matt. It's been a pleasure to talk to you.
Thank you for joining us for a special Rethinks episode of Think Fast, Talk Smart, the podcast. This episode was produced by Catherine Reed, Ryan Campos, and me, Matt Abrahams. Our music is from Floyd Wonder, with thanks to Podium Podcast Company. Please find us on YouTube and wherever you get your podcasts. Be sure to subscribe and rate us. Also follow us on LinkedIn, TikTok, and Instagram. And check out fastersmarter.io for deep dive videos, English language learning content, and our newsletter. Please also consider joining Think Fast, Talk Smart's learning community at fastersmarter.io/learning. You'll find video lessons, learning quests, discussion boards, our AI coaches, and book club. Before we wrap up, I just want to say thank you for listening. It really means a lot to hear how people all over the world are using these ideas in their own lives. It inspires me and the whole team that brings you this show. If you want more episodes and resources, feel free to follow, subscribe, and explore past conversations. We're grateful for your support of Think Fast, Talk Smart.